Opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Beth O'Malley of Be Well with Beth at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com anywhere. And I am here today with a wonderful senior from Greenwich High School, Lucy Massam. Lucy, hi, welcome, Lucy.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
Lucy has a YouTube show, correct?
Yes.
And you have really become a little bit of a YouTube celebrity right here in Greenwich. This has been really exciting for a lot of your friends.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Kids locally. What's so neat about your show is you're addressing mental health issues.
Yeah. And so that started, I think, a couple months after I started my channel. And I kind of came to this turning point and I was like, I have a platform here and I am suffering from mental illness. And I know a lot of other people are too. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of started to talk about it. And it started with videos on self-confidence. And then that translated into anxiety and my depression story. And a lot of people really liked it. So I just kept going.
Yeah. I think what's so great about it is you're taking real life and things that a lot of kids and parents are not talking about and putting it out in the public and saying, you know what, I'm here, I'm okay, I'm Lucy, and it's fine that I have depression, it's fine that I have anxiety, I sought help, mm-hmm. and it's changed my life. But
exactly.
You're giving other kids the permission to do that.
Yeah. Exactly. Which it was a big reason I wanted to is because no one was talking about it.
Right.
And so when I was going through it, I didn't have those videos of other people to watch. And I knew that would be beneficial for other people. So I wanted to do that.
Well, just a few weeks ago, you did a wonderful program with Greenwich High School with one of my favorite teachers over there, the health teacher.
Yes, Kathy Steiner.
She's amazing.
She's awesome.
I was lucky enough to work with Kathy about two and three years ago now in starting the Stress Success and Teenage Setbacks program. And it's basically twice a year, I believe, now.
Mm-hmm.
And they have speakers who are from the high school who tell their own stories.
Yeah.
Of very different struggles. I've been there to see struggles about substance abuse, struggles about depression, lots of different issues that kids bring up. But they also bring in professional speakers. Mm-hmm. And of course, Dr. Tedesi.
DeTesso.
I got his name wrong. DeTesso, he is a great psychologist. He's in the schools. He's in private practice as well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're always promoting him because he just has his hands on the pulse of what teens are going through today.
Totally. Yeah. So he spoke as well. And then this year we had Zeke Thomas speak, who was a rape victim. So very different stories, but all about like stress and coping. And so it was really interesting to see like different perspectives.
Yeah. What's so incredible about this program in particular is that people tell their real story.
Yeah. It is very raw and vulnerable, but it's good because there was like a big crowd there, but you knew everyone that was there was going to like get help and kind of gain empathy for their children or their friends who are dealing with this, which was a cool environment to be in and to be a part of, definitely.
That's what I like about it so much is I can't tell you how many times there are parents in the audience who feel like I'm isolated here in Greenwich, my child is going through a struggle. And to sit and to see other teens get up and discuss those struggles openly in a public forum really can be very inspiring and moving.
Totally, especially because most of the time teens don't tell their parents exactly what they're going through.
Right.
They just kind of shut them out and will say like little like blurbs here and there like, oh, well, I'm actually really anxious or like I'm really having a tough time. But to actually voice to your parents what you're going through is a difficult thing. So to hear other kids talk about that mm-hmm. kind of gives insight to what their child might be dealing with, which is a really powerful thing. Definitely.
You know, the first speaker that we ever had with Stress Success and Teenage Setbacks was Scooter Braun. That was fascinating.
Yeah.
He told his story and he specifically said, I'm going to position the camera so we can see you a little bit better here. He told his story and he said, all right, all cameras and videos off right now. And he told the real deal, the real story about what he you know, really went through as a producer for someone who's in the music industry, who was struggling with substance abuse, with, you know, all kinds of mood issues that go along with substance abuse. And to hear the real story, like the behind the scenes, how do you deal with that? Did you go to Al-Anon? Did you get 12-step support? A lot of people don't even realize that there's support. AA is for alcoholics and mm-hmm. addicts, but there's Al-Anon, which is for family members, and it's a great place to go if you have a loved one who's struggling with substance abuse, say.
Yeah.
And so he told what it was like to be, you know, to care about and care for and be the caretaker for someone who's in your care, and yet they're really struggling.
Yeah.
So that was wild.
Wow, that's so powerful.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Awesome.
And I think a year ago they had a rapper.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah,
no,
one of
I didn't
the
see
high
that.
School kids knew how to rap, and he came on and he did a whole rap about depression. That was really
wow,
awesome.
Wow, yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. All right. Well, tell us a little bit. I want to let, if our listeners are interested, you know, from Facebook or from the radio, if they're interested in seeing you on YouTube, how did they find you?
So you can just look up my name. It's Lucy Massam, and then you should find my channel right there, and I have, like, over 100 videos, a lot of videos. Yeah, I started about a year and a half ago, so I have kind of a plethora of different topics on there. So, yeah, that's how you can find me. It's very public, so.
All right, so here's this. For me, it's so incredible to interview someone who's at the high school, who is a teen, who's currently addressing all of these issues. But I can't bring in my patients, right? Because
yeah.
it's a breach of confidentiality and
of
all
course.
This. So I did not treat her. I want to
yes.
just come out and say that. We met through your mom,
mm-hmm. yep.
Who's a great fellow CrossFitter. and so what happens for me is I'm often working with these kids, and I really need to engage them in the process, but also their parents. What
yeah.
advice would you give to parents who are listening?
To parents, I think this is kind of the hard part, because definitely when I was going through it, I couldn't talk to my parents about it. It's not that I couldn't, I just didn't know what to say, because my parents have never gone through serious mental illness, both of them, as they were growing up. So that's very interesting, like, for me to go about this situation. But for parents, I think first listening to your children and not trying to give advice when they're coming to you for anything, kind of like isolating yourself from, like, putting your input in and really just hearing what they have to say, whatever that may be. Because usually what happens is when you're struggling with anxiety or depression or any mental illness, you don't exactly know why you're feeling that way. And
right.
that's something that's really difficult. It's like you have a roof over your head, you're doing fine in school. Why are you so unhappy? And so that's also something that parents, it's hard for parents to understand, because they're like, yeah. I am doing everything I can. Why are you feeling like this? So I think really listening and then being open to getting them therapy, even medication if it comes to that, because a lot of my friends that I know, they can't even talk to their parents about it, because they're like, right. they would never let me go to therapy, which is something I can't even wrap my head around, because right. I would be nowhere without it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's funny for me. I grew up in New York and my dad was a family therapist, so it just seemed like in New York, that's just what everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could be at Starbucks online and you can hear everyone saying, well, my therapist is so-and-so. So I'm used to that mentality,
yeah.
right? And then to come to a town like Greenwich, quite frankly, New Canaan, Darien, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Westport's a little bit more edgy, a little more New York. They're
yeah.
much more willing to talk about their therapist. There's many more therapists in the town of Westport than we have here. And it was just shocking that families aren't talking about it, and that when parents bring their child in for panic attacks, for anxiety attacks, for depression, for OCD, for, just anxiety in
yeah.
general, generalized anxiety, that there's this almost, well, sometimes guilt and shame. And the shame was what was so surprising to me, because coming from New York and coming from the mental health profession, I'm so used to people being open about it. I mean, I'm the first one to say in college was when I started my own therapy. Mm. And it's because I had a breakup freshman year in college, and I didn't handle it well. I don't do well with breakups. So I right away called my dad, who's a family therapist, and he got me a therapist, and there you go. Mm. But it never occurred to me that that's something that should be hush-hush.
Exactly. Which is something that's really interesting, because when I had never really talked about any of this, just because none of my friends had. My parents had never, like, none of my parents' friends. It was never a topic of conversation, which I think is so wrong, because it's a huge part of daily life, you know? And it helps talking about it. And even something I learned, because I talked about my panic attacks in a couple of videos, but one of my videos was really focused on panic attacks, and I got a lot of hate comments, which really hard for me, because I was like putting myself completely out there for not only the benefit of myself to talk about it, but for other people, because I knew other people were having panic attacks and didn't know why. But I got a lot of comments being like, you're just this rich girl from Fairfield County who has never gone through anything in her life. And that was hard for me to deal with when I was still suffering, because I thought, you know what? You're right. Like, I've never gone through anything, which plays into this whole shame thing.
Yes, exactly.
Which is hard.
Yeah. Right. I think that's what's so important, especially if the parents haven't experienced depression, if there isn't a first generation person who has experienced OCD, depression, or anxiety. It takes a lot of education to explain how the brain works, how serotonin works, and how that's genetic. And so often when I start to do a family tree in a session, we discover that there is a cousin, an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, there's usually somebody in the family system who either struggled with substance abuse, maybe because they were self-medicating a depression, and back in the day there was no Prozac, right?
Yeah.
Or there's a chemical imbalance, and the way that their serotonin levels affected them was through OCD, which looks very different than anxiety or depression. But it's all kind of the same thing that's going on in the brain.
Completely. I have a little bit of OCD too. Well, sometimes, like, when I talk to my therapist about, like, what I'm dealing with, she's like, that sounds like OCD. You know, it kind of all interplays in, like, different parts, which is interesting. Yeah,
it's interesting. One of the first clients I had with anxiety, who was a teenager, she did great. We used medication, you know, followed the recommended treatment. Within 6 to 18 months, she wanted to remove the medication, and the brain has now figured out and taught itself how to work properly with no meds, which is the way to go.
Exactly.
Right? We got that all settled. 2 years later, it was time to apply to colleges, and what happened? She went from having one to another issue, all because of the same underlying issue, which is how the serotonin's working in the brain.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand. I mean, obviously, if you're not educated on it, you wouldn't understand. But especially parents, it's like they don't really understand that it is like a chemical imbalance sometimes. Yes. And like sometimes you need medication to fix that. Obviously, there are other ways to go about it if it's not as serious. But like a lot of people are so turned off to medication, which is like when you are injured or have surgery, you take pain medication to help. It's like a similar thing, which a lot of people don't have that mentality, which is unfortunate.
Well, I think in our society, people are still saying depression is made up, you know.
Completely.
Right. So who's going to believe that medication helps? And then the other fear is, you know, 30 years ago when they first started really using Prozac regularly with people, you went on and you never came off. Well, now we know that that's the complete opposite of what you need to do for most clients.
Yeah.
Right.
Completely.
And our psychiatry staff in town is fantastic. There are great people in town who know how to put a child on, stabilize the brain, and then take the medication right off.
Yeah.
And you think you're still on it, even though you're on nothing.
Exactly. Right. And that's what happened to me, which was a cool thing.
It's great.
So, yeah.
All right. And of course, there are many holistic ways to go when medication is not indicated. And certainly medication's not indicated for everyone. We're going to be talking about all that when we come back. And also how you first got into this. I want to hear about your first YouTube show.
Okay.
So this is Beth O'Malley at O'Malley Wellness. Be well with Beth. We're here at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com anywhere. And we'll be right back.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Sunny and warm weather this afternoon near 75. Clouds come in tonight with showers developing after midnight, 52 to 57. Cloudy cooler with rain showers tomorrow, 65. And turning mostly sunny, 75 to 80 Wednesday. Sunny Thursday, low 70s, and sunny 75 to 80 for the day on Friday. I'm meteorologist Bill Jacquemin on 1490 WGCH.
Author of Buttermilk Graffiti, in conversation with Jeff Gordonier, food and drinks editor of Esquire magazine. A natural-born storyteller, Chef Lee decided to hit the road and spent 2 years uncovering fascinating narratives from every corner of the country. You will learn about the people behind the food and their traditions and techniques. The library's Focus on Food series will engage patrons of all ages as we leverage library resources to explore our relationship with and the future of food from a historical, environmental, technological, and very personal perspective. This program will take place on Wednesday, May 23rd at 7 p.m. in the Cole Auditorium. Please call the library at 622-7910 for more information. I'm Margaret Walsh of Greenwich Library on 1490 WGCH.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Beth O'Malley. I'm here with Lucy Massam today. She is a high school senior, and you're headed off to college where?
UC Santa Barbara.
Which is so awesome.
Yes.
Are you excited?
I'm very excited, yeah.
I can't even imagine living in California year-round. It's going to be wonderful. So we're at 1490 WGCH. We're also here live today on Facebook Live. So hello, everyone out there, our Facebook audience. You got started on YouTube.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit. When I was talking with your mom, she said that there was a letter you wrote to your grandparents. And that
to my parents.
To your parents.
Yes, my parents.
Ah,
yeah.
And that kind of got the ball rolling.
Yes. That really changed everything. Yeah. So it was in summer of 2015 when I wrote the letter. And basically, I had struggled with depression, I think, a year prior.
Okay.
And that stemmed from a back injury. I would think I was depressed for about 4 or 5 months, but I had overcome that. I wasn't depressed anymore, but I had severe anxiety.
Okay.
And so I wrote the letter because it kind of got to this point where I was like, I cannot live like this anymore. It got that bad. And this, at this point, I wasn't in therapy or anything. I was on no medication. I had never been on medication. And so in the letter, I kind of told my parents, like, I am really suffering, and like daily tasks that you deem very simple are keeping me up at night, and I can't do it, you know. And I was just explained to them, like, even when you say little things to me like, oh, you have to do this community service, that would consume me for the whole day.
Yes.
And that's what anxiety
sure.
was doing to me. And so I gave them this letter, and it was like 11 o'clock at night. I was like, I don't want to talk about it, but I need you to read this. And my mom came back in my room like crying, and she was like, I know you don't want to talk about it, but I just want to know that, like, I had no idea, like, I'm here for you, we'll get you help. And that was something that really shocked me, was that she had no idea.
Right.
And I had always just assumed that she would have known, but I had never told her.
Yes.
And so at that point, when I gave her the letter, she got me into therapy, and she started to not talk to me about school or about college or anything, because she knew that I was already putting so much pressure on myself.
Right.
That I didn't need her to do that. And so that was such a relief on me, and like being home wasn't stressful anymore, you know, because we found out ways to communicate that wouldn't trigger my anxiety. And then I got therapy, and that really helped, and I ended up going on medication. And through therapy, I learned ways to better communicate with my parents, because I would just kind of shut them out and isolate myself,
sure.
better communicate with my friends, you know, all of it. And that was kind of the catalyst to me getting help and being where I am now, I guess, was that letter. And so then I shared it online about a year later, because I found it randomly.
Oh, it was a year after.
Yeah, and so I found it randomly. And so I decided to share it because I was like, you know what, this might just help one person. And so I was really nervous to publish it, because before this, I had never talked about anything mental health related on my channel. It was all kind of fun videos with my friends. And so I was so scared, but I posted it. And then like 10 minutes later, I got a Snapchat from someone bawling, crying, being like, Lucy, like, I feel the exact same way, and I had no idea. Mm. And I would get these direct messages from, like, young middle school girls being like, you inspired me to get help and, like, realize that I was suffering, which was kind of the moment I realized that my anxiety might be the best thing to ever happen to me, because I now have this whole new outlet on things and, like, outlook also. So that was the letter.
Ah, yeah. I knew it was something special, and I knew from other kids that it had really inspired a lot of kids around town to reach out for help. But it's wonderful to hear you explain how that came into being. I didn't realize it was a year later.
Yes.
That you had it.
Yeah,
wow.
So
you were in a better place to really talk about
definitely.
It a year later, because you'd already had some treatment.
Definitely. And that was something that I had learned through my YouTube channel, was when I, because I have filmed a lot of videos talking about things that I just haven't published, because when you're in such a dark mindset, it comes off as self-pity, even when you don't realize it. Mm-hmm. And that's how you speak. And so kind of healing a little bit and really being able to understand what I was going through allowed me to better talk about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good. Wonderful. Yeah. And how amazing for you that your parents were open to supporting you and getting you the help.
It was amazing. Yeah. And that was, the therapy was really great, because they were like, we're gonna get you someone. My mom like reached out to her friends like right away, and the medication was definitely something that we had to talk about, because they were not that open to it. I mean, my parents are like the most accepting people ever, so I knew they would let me, but it was definitely hard because they didn't want me to be reliant on something or something to change my personality or something, which was something I was scared of too. But I think it got to the point where my therapist and my psychiatrist recommended it, and I was just saying to my parents, like, I need this, like, I can't go on without it. It got that bad, and they were completely accepting and like willing to try anything, really, which was amazing.
That's great. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes when someone's really at that level of depression, where therapy can do so much in terms of teaching healthy coping skills, mm-hmm. but sometimes it's needed to bring up the level of depression to a point where you can even learn new healthy coping
skills.
And, you know, all of the research says that therapy can move you so far, or meds can move you so far, but together they're going to move you way up.
Yeah,
way
and up. That's something I learned, definitely, which was cool. Yeah,
it's cool. And, you know, what meds do for the brain is very similar to what meditation does for the brain. Mm-hmm. The problem is, in our day, in common day life in Greenwich, we're not all able to go off to the ashram, right?
Exactly.
We can't go to India and spend 3 months meditating in order to change our brain chemistry.
I know.
Now, meditation does, right?
Yeah.
Meditation does that. And it is helpful. You know, certainly I always start with holistic approaches.
Yeah.
And we look at what vitamins, getting blood work to see if you're deficient of B and D.
That's what I did first also, by the way. But yeah.
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 And that's for many kids, probably, I'd say at least 25%. That's enough to make a huge difference.
Yes.
And you never even consider meds. Maybe into that you might need, maybe that doesn't make the difference. Well, then you could add once a day yoga or once a day working out. But quite frankly, most of you guys at the high school are working out so much as it is because you're involved in sports.
Exactly. Yeah. But meditation actually is really helped me. I don't do it every day. I wish I had the time, but I just get so caught up. But that was something when I was really anxious. Meditating would change my whole mood for the whole entire day, which is something I tell my friends all the time. I'm just like, guys, even 5 minutes, it changes your mood for the whole day.
Yeah,
which is
wonderful.
Awesome.
The other piece I always suggest to kids at school is go in and meet your school social worker, your guidance counselor.
Totally.
First of all, the school social worker is a psychotherapist.
Yes.
And in every house, there's at least one, as well as a school psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you need a time out or just take a break after a stressful exam, you can go right in and sit with that therapist.
That's what I did actually towards the end of sophomore year. This was before I wrote the letter to my parents in the summer, but it was around June and I was incredibly anxious, but I didn't really know it was anxiety. I couldn't really put a name to it. I would just compare myself to other people the whole time. I would think everyone was talking about me the whole time at school. It was horrible. And so my friend kind of had to push me in the social worker's office, like, for a week straight. I was like, I'm not going in. Like, it's so embarrassing. Or not embarrassing, but I was just so nervous that I didn't know. And then I went, and she was really helpful. I think I only went, like, two or three times. This was before I had a therapist. So I only went, like, two or three times. But she was great in just reassuring me that, like, I'm, like, an independent person and, like, I don't need to compare myself to other people. And, like, obviously she did more than that, but it was really helpful, which is something that not a lot of people do. They don't go and see them, you know? Which, and it's
Who was your school? What house were you in?
Folsom. I think her name was Miss Blackbird. I don't remember what her name was.
Oh, I know. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
She was great.
Yeah, she's a psychologist.
Yeah,
psychologist. She's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really good.
I know. And I don't think the school advertises that enough either.
They don't. And the private schools all have the same thing set up.
Oh, really?
So all of the private schools in town have a school psychologist as well as a school social worker. And many people don't realize a social worker is a psychotherapist. It's just the degree versus the label, right? So, but at the school, you know, at Greenwich High School, there are even girls groups in the morning for kids who have depression.
Yeah. I didn't even know that.
And I've had kids where I'll recommend if they're in the right house with the right social worker, then there's something might be an opening. And you know, there's not 100 of them.
Yeah.
But there's enough that it's really a great resource for some kids. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's good. And it's across the board. So you might be in a group at the high school with a 9th grader and a 12th grader in the same group.
Yeah.
It really is supportive because as you're going through the halls, if you're having anxiety or panic attacks, you see someone from your group and you're like, all right, I'm good.
Or
you
can so pull them true. In.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's such a great resource. Yeah. Wow.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, good. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. This was awesome.
Of course. Thank you.
Congratulations on getting into school.
Thank you.
Enjoy California. What are you going to study?
Film and media studies.
So. Well, that fits with your YouTube
work. Yeah, and the photography thing. It's all interplaying, which is awesome.
Good. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Of course, yeah.
All right, terrific. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be meeting with an educational attorney, and that attorney helps parents when there's a situation that really needs outside help from a special school, like a therapeutic boarding school, for example. We'll be right back. This is Beth O'Malley at O'Malley Wellness. Be well with Beth, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Mostly sunny, warm this afternoon near 75. Clouds come in tonight with showers developing after midnight, 52 to 57. Cloudy, cooler tomorrow with rain, shower 65, and turning mostly sunny 75 to 80 Wednesday. Sunny low 70s Thursday and sunny 75 to 80 on Friday. For the latest allergy information and weather information 24 hours a day, watch our Connecticut Weather Channel and the CT County Cast at ctweatherchannel.com. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwoman on 1490 WGCH.
WGCH 1490.
We love to talk sports on WGCH, and we know Greenwich is a great sports town. This is Rob Adams, the host of Doubleheader with, well, Rob Adams. Weekday afternoons at 3, I'll guide you through the very latest in the world of sports and more with guests and commentary. Call us, and let's make it interactive. High school, college, youth sports, the pros, whatever, let's talk about it. That's Doubleheader with Rob Adams, weekday afternoons at 3 on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com, anywhere.
Welcome back. This is Beth O'Malley at O'Malley Wellness, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. We are here today. We're just setting up Facebook here, so we're not taping our producer over here, but us. I am coming back to you with Michael Gilberg, who is an attorney in... are you located? You're not here in Greenwich. I'm on the New York side.
I'm in New York, but I represent families all across New York and Connecticut.
All right, great. I'm just going to bring you into the camera a little bit here. There we go. Terrific.
Sorry, I'm in Westchester County, but as I said, I represent families across both states.
So an educational attorney is
Special
ed attorney is a different type of attorney. Can you tell us a little bit about the types of situations that parents bring to you?
Sure. Following on your last segment with Lucy, right, about her situation and about her blog, a lot of times kids have trouble in school, and schools don't always know how to address children with disabilities. So I represent families when they are either in dispute with the school district about programs or services for a child with a disability, where they suspect their child has a disability and the school isn't addressing it, autism, ADHD, anxiety, depression, bipolar, all sorts of mental health conditions, learning disabilities. We get less cases of blinded kids, deaf kids, or kids in wheelchairs. Those are pretty well addressed. But if the parents either think their child has a disability and they're not getting identified properly or not getting services, or they don't think the school is doing what's appropriate, or they don't think this child can be served by the public school, they hire an attorney to help them navigate, a special ed attorney to help them navigate the system. And often schools won't give you what you need unless you hire an attorney to make some noise, because
in some districts, that's very true. The public school system is responsible for each child. What if the child, let's say, lives in a public system but is going to a private school?
What kind of private school do you mean?
Just a regular prep school.
Well, the school district, if the parents place the child in a prep school, it's their burden to ensure certain things are done. Although the school is required, if the child has special ed needs, the school district where the child where the prep school is located is required to provide supplementary services like speech, occupational therapy, okay, physical therapy. But if a child is in a private special education school, that is, and the parents can unilaterally place in a special ed school if they feel that's appropriate and seek reimbursement from the public school district that they live in for that.
Got it. Okay, that's what I was thinking, is that the public system ends up having to pay for that need. One of the things that I have to be honest with you about is, here in Greenwich, having worked with so many families, we're a little spoiled. Our school district has been so influential in getting children their needs met. I on occasion on the show have talked about my own experience. Having been in the field, I wasn't aware that I had a child who was going to be qualified for both a PPT and an IEP plan.
Well, and PPT is the meeting and IEP is the plan. That,
right. So we were called in for the PPT, the parent planning meeting.
Yes.
And then out of that, the
develops
test
an IEP,
right,
which is under federal law. The IEP is under the IDEA, which is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which is a federal law that mandates every child with a disability is entitled to a free and appropriate public education. And what it means is the child's not entitled to the best. They're not entitled to all the bells and whistles, but they're not entitled to the worst either, to something they're entitled to appropriate. And the Supreme Court last year, in a surprising 8-0 ruling, ruled that the progress must be more than de minimis, that they have to make appreciable progress. And very often what we find is school districts say the child's making progress and they're not.
Now, again, what I'm going to go back to is, I think we're spoiled a little bit in this town, because there are times when the family doesn't realize there's a need, but the schools will call the families and contact them and say, you know what, there's a weakness here, there's a possible processing delay or learning disability or ADHD that's not been picked up, and we'd like to do some extensive testing. Would you come in for the PPT? And the parents often will come in not knowing what a PPT is. I've had families come into my office who don't have any services in place because they moved here midstream, so it wasn't identified in another elementary school. Now they're in middle school or high school, and I'll suggest that they get in touch with the school to look at doing a meeting for a 504, and out of that, oftentimes, the school will say, you know what, maybe we need to do a PPT.
Well, in fact, I mean, Greenwich, like any district, has its pluses and minuses. There are, you know, families that have been happy. There are families that don't. No district is perfect.
Sure.
And a 504, I find, is a lot of districts use to get out of providing services.
Can you explain the difference between
a
504?
A 504 is for accommodations. It's for something that you can't work to improve, a disability that you can't work on, like an allergy. You can't improve a food allergy or an allergy to bees. But if a child has ADHD or autism or dyslexia, you want to work with them to overcome some of the obstacles. A 504 doesn't do that. It doesn't have goals. It doesn't have objectives. It doesn't allow you to really measure progress. It just says, oh, give him extra time and let him be. But it doesn't work on improving the skill set.
Okay. And that's where the IEP,
comes in. A 504 is more for things you can't work to improve. You can't improve a child's allergies.
Got it. So I have had children that in my practice who are on 504 for depression.
And really, those should be our kids on IEPs because there should be a goal, which a 504 doesn't have, improve their depression, to lift their mood, to make them happier. Those are things that a 504 just says, oh, you can go outside if you need it to take a break, but it doesn't work to alleviate the depression.
So a 504 plan, for example, wouldn't give you the free services of meeting regularly with the school psychologist.
Oh, it can, but it doesn't necessarily say you have a measurable goal to say by a year from now you will find more positivity in life, or the mood will be lifted.
Got it. Okay. So that's where the IEP is so important.
Correct.
Now, there are times where the school district, and certainly there are tons of schools now that have in-school special programs, right?
And that's good for some kids. Some kids, it's a great thing. Some kids need more intensive help, but they need out-of-district placements in private schools, either therapeutic schools or special ed schools,
right,
that are more smaller environments, more structured. A lot of kids with disabilities don't do well in public high schools because they're too large an environment.
So can you describe for us what a therapeutic school is? And are they always boarding schools, or are they sometimes where you sleep at home?
No, they're not always boarding schools. Very often they're day schools. A therapeutic school is a school that addresses the therapeutic needs, mental health, emotional needs, along with the educational needs.
Okay. All right. Good. In my experience, in order to have a district pay for a special placement, you're probably going to have to hire someone like you.
Exactly. Districts don't pay for private placements without an attorney. It's very rare, unless it's such an open and shut case that they just want to get it off their plate, or there's a reason they can't have the kid in the school.
Can you give us some examples of cases where you've been able to get to the place where a therapeutic placement was made and what the disability was?
Most of the time, those are placements for kids with autism or ADHD or a mental health condition. I've got a couple of cases now of some young women who are bipolar and they can't function in a public school. I have a case somewhere else in Connecticut I just received of a young man who tried to commit suicide on campus, and the school isn't seeing it as a problem.
On campus, meaning at the public school?
At the public school, yes.
Wow.
And the school doesn't see it as a problem, and the parents don't want to send it back. So you run into these issues where we have cases of – I have a case in New York where a girl who has got bipolar and she's a danger to herself and a danger to her parents. She's in Israel right now, and they have to figure out what to do with her. But there are a lot of these cases. I have a client, the school in New York, the school doesn't want to do anything about her in a very large school district where she was doing drugs and having sex on the high school campus, and the school doesn't see these as an issue.
Okay, so that's where an attorney comes in.
And says there's an issue there. This girl's got bipolar as well.
Okay. What about someone who is on the spectrum of autism and they haven't been identified?
Well, an attorney like myself can advocate to the district to get them properly identified. One of the big challenges we find is that school districts say, well, his communication levels are normal, so he's not on the spectrum, but they don't look at what's called pragmatic communication, which is social communication.
Right.
The child's expressive and receptive language, which is the ability to speak and use language, is normal or typical, but the pragmatic language, the social nuance of language, is not there.
Yes, yes. And that's where the testing is needed. So would you advocate, and I hear this all the time in my office, should we have the school district pay for the testing, or should we hire our own psychologist
to do
the
testing? Well, the law states that if the school district gets the first shot at all testing, and 99 times out of 100, I don't trust school district testing. It's always biased. It's always inadequate. There's always things missing. And the school district districts all have a vested interest in what the results of that testing will be. Under the law, if the parents disagree with testing, the parents disagree with testing, they're entitled to ask for what's called an independent educational evaluation at district expense. And the district has a choice. They can either grant the independent evaluation where the parents get an outside evaluation of a provider of their choosing, provided they're qualified, that the district pays for, or the district files for a hearing to defend their evaluation. 99 times out of 100, there's some reason the district can't defend their evaluation, and they'll grant the independent evaluation. So I always tell parents, why are you going to spend $5,000 on a private evaluation when I can get the district to pay for that for you? And they should. I've seen districts do some of the shoddiest work of their evaluations. They don't make recommendations that they're required to. They do very superficial testing.
All right. And then I should mention around here, $5,000 would be a bargain. Our psychological testing reports in town tend to range from $8,000 to $12,000.
I think it depends on the provider and the thoroughness. A lot of districts try to cap the prices.
Okay. All right. Good. We will be right back. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Sunny and warm weather this afternoon near 75. Clouds come in tonight with showers developing after midnight, 52 to 57. Cloudy, cooler with rain showers tomorrow, 65, and turning mostly sunny, 75 to 80 Wednesday. Sunny Thursday, low 70s, and sunny 75 to 80 for the day on Friday. I'm meteorologist Bill Jacquemin on 1490 WGCH.
Thursday night at 6, listen in and even converse with the man in the know regarding all matters Greenwich. Listen to Sam Romeo's show, Greenwich Matters, brought to you by Parsonage, where their philosophy is to assist you in living life your way. From the beach to the backcountry, education, recreation, or politics, learn all about it on Greenwich Matters, every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. on 1490 WGCH.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. I am here today with an incredible gentleman. He is an attorney out of New York in Westchester County.
Correct.
His name is Michael Gilberg. And Michael, I met you through Daria Rockholtz, one of my favorite people in town. Daria is an educational consultant, and I had a few cases recently where we thought, maybe we need an attorney involved, and so she introduced me to you. It's been a pleasure getting to know you and working with you and starting to learn a little bit about what you can do for families when they're not quite sure where to go and how the system works. You have such an interesting, unique story in terms of how you came into this field, how you became a special ed educational consultant attorney.
And not consultant attorney.
Right, not consultant. And
Beth, let me just add to that. You just said something very important that I think is worth noting, which is this. You said about learning about when parents need an attorney. Very often I find navigating the system, parents don't understand the system. It's very overwhelming.
Right.
And the thing I've learned over the years is parents don't know what they don't know.
Right. That's exactly the issue. And I will often say, you know, parents want the educational consultant and the therapist sometimes to do what only you know how to do.
Right.
And there's only so much that my training is certainly not in law, and that's where you come in.
Right, and there's laws that have to be followed, and the school district will bring in their attorney. And when the school district brings in their attorney, you need an attorney.
Absolutely, yeah. All right, so how did you get into the field?
So I was a child. I was undiagnosed with Asperger's syndrome until I was 18. I was put in special ed. I did not get an appropriate education. I was bounced from program to program. I was put on Ritalin. I was put in programs that were not the right fit for me. The only thing that I had going for me was my mother was a strong advocate.
Mm-hmm.
But I remind her to this day that I didn't get the services, and she's like, what do you want me to do 30 years later?
Right.
So, but the problem is that, you know, back in the 1980s and early 90s, they didn't know what to do. The system was not as advanced as it is today. I think one of the big pivotal moments is when I was in the sixth grade, I had one friend, and we had a social worker in our special ed program, who said that, told my mother, throw your son away, forget about him, he's never going to graduate high school. Now I'm a lawyer. my one friend trusted him with something in a private therapy session. He then told the entire class, even though the kid asked him to not repeat it to anyone. The kid asked for confidence. The guy said, okay, never, then violated the confidence. Kid never trusted an adult again, and the day before his 16th birthday committed suicide because he never trusted an adult again. All these years later, they said, meanwhile, they had sent him back to public school saying he was well-adjusted, he was fine, he had no issues. He was fine, I was the one who was a problem. Well, that was 25 years ago in a few months. So, you know, we see what the result was. As I always say, right. He failed me, but he failed this kid worse.
Right.
About 4 or 5 years ago, I looked up the social worker to reach out, because now with the internet, you can find anybody and say, listen, you failed both of us, and this is what you did. But I found his obituary that he died in 2011 of cancer. So, unfortunately, I didn't get the satisfaction of telling him he was wrong.
Right.
But once I got to college, I turned my life around and I started to make progress and succeed. And I caught myself up, and this is going to sound a bit arrogant, but I was smart enough to fill in the gaps that I didn't get educationally in school, in college on my own. I caught myself up. I graduated college with a 3.8.
Wow. Where did you go?
Pace in Westchester.
Oh, terrific.
So I was able to fill in all the gaps that I shouldn't have had to fill in.
Sure.
And I was able to, from there, thought about what I wanted to do with my life, and I went to law school, and I realized I wanted to be a special ed attorney and help other children avoid a lot of the problems I had growing up.
Yeah.
And I bring from it a passion for helping children who are in the same situation or similar situations to what I went through or my friend went through.
Mm-hmm.
And most attorneys in this field, a lot of attorneys fall into it because they're the parent of a child in special ed. It's actually a very female-dominated field of law. I'm on the board of COPA, which is the National Professional, and let me repeat that, it's COPA, C-O-P-A-A. It's the National Professional Organization of Parents, of Special Education Attorneys and Advocates who represent families, not school districts. And our membership's about 60 to 70% female. And most of the attorneys are mothers of children who were attorneys in other fields, or they went back to law school. But a lot of times you have a woman who's a corporate attorney, her mm-hmm. child develops a disability, and she transitions into this. So, but there's very few attorneys in the field who are doing this who are actually were the kid in special ed. I have a friend who's an attorney in Westchester as well who has ADHD. He does it. But other than him and me and a handful of others, it's very rare. A friend who's a law student up in Syracuse, she's got dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a self-advocate trying to break it. But like I said, it's a rarity. Most of the time it's parents or people fall in from other areas of law for a variety of reasons through circumstance. But it's, you know, I think I bring a certain empathy and unique position. Having lived a life, I can place myself where a lot of these children are.
Sure, of course. Where did you go to law school?
Pace in Westchester.
Oh, you were at law school there as well.
Yes, it was local, so it was easy.
Oh, good.
Pace is a good place to go if you either want to be local or do environmental law.
Okay, good.
I have no interest in environmental law. But it's, and I bring, and I, and because of that, I charge less than other attorneys, because as I always tell families, it's not less service, but I was that child in special ed, so I want legal services to be affordable to families while earning a living. I don't need to get wealthy off of families.
Yeah. Tell me this. Are the laws different in New York, York versus Connecticut?
There's some nuance, but the IDEA is a federal law, so the general law is the same.
Okay.
But there's nuances in each state about when you have to, about notice of certain things or how procedures for IEP meetings. Little nuance.
And your,
every district is unique. And then New York has New York City, which has its own set of regulations and laws unto itself. New York City is like nowhere else in the country for special ed. In fact, Westchester and Connecticut are more similar than Westchester is to the city.
Is that right?
Yes, because in Westchester or Connecticut or any suburban school district, any town, whether it's, you know, Somers or Larchmont or Mamaroneck or Greenwich or Hartford or Fairfield, when I get a case, I contact the attorney for that school district and say, what are we going to do? New York City doesn't have a, quote, board attorney. They have a big bureaucracy that you have to basically file for a hearing to just get a person to negotiate with. Finding the person you need to talk to is a virtual impossible, is very hard.
Wow.
Whereas I prefer cases outside the city because it's so much more complicated.
Okay, that makes sense. Tell me, nationwide, what is the state of special education?
Again, it varies from state to state, and unfortunately, with the current administration, regulations are being rolled back. And without getting too political, Betsy DeVos, who's the current education secretary, is not well-versed in special ed. She doesn't understand it. Every time she's been asked a question about it, she's failed to understand it. And so a lot of guidance and regulation has been rolled back. COPA actually took a position against her nomination, not for partisan reasons, but because she didn't know what the IDEA was. But certain states like New York and Connecticut have protections that other states don't have. I've heard from friends in much more conservative states in the South that it's much worse in those places because they don't have those statewide protections.
Yeah, that makes sense. Can you tell us what the rights are of children with disabilities under IDEA?
Well, the right is to a free and appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. And one of the common misconceptions is that the least restrictive environment is always a public school. There are kids who are actually, if they're in a public school and they keep being put in a isolation room and segregated, but if they could be in a special ed school and be out with their peers, that would be a less restrictive environment. Another thing parents don't often know and schools don't tell them is that the IDEA is not just about education, is not just about educational attainment, but also social and emotional. It speaks to social
right.
and emotional yes. goals and needs. So you could have the smartest kid. Like I said, I have a client. He's an A student, very bright on the spectrum, but he's tried to commit suicide, which is a mental health issue because of the isolation. And unfortunately, schools are very bad about the social emotional piece. They say, well, he's getting A's and B's, but they don't look at the anxiety, depression, isolation that goes along with that.
Exactly. So that comes into my next question. What disabilities are covered?
Any disability. And the definition of disability is something that impairs a major life activity. And there are like 13 categories under the IDEA, but one of them is a catch-all for any miscellaneous. Most of the time it's autism, ADHD, learning disabilities, any mental health condition, bipolar, schizophrenia, what have you, blindness, deafness, orthopedic impairments, mobility impairments, missing limbs. But, you know, again, if you have a child with a missing arm, it's less about an IEP because you can't make that better. It's a 504 to just give them accommodations. You can't make an arm grow. And I think that what we find is that children with mobility impairments or blindness or deafness in many ways get a greater level of understanding than children with more invisible disabilities. People understand what their disabilities. They don't understand autism or ADHD.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Many times, like I've had teachers say to the parents, your child's just being lazy. He needs to toughen up. He needs to work harder. And they don't understand that, you know, they don't understand that the child has a real mental health issue or a real disability. They think he's just being lazy and he's just not tough enough.
Right. You know, I think Lucy in our last...
I was very impressed by Lucy.
Yeah.
And if there were more kids like Lucy, there'd be greater education.
Yeah, because she's so outspoken about the needs of teens in our community. Lucy Massam was just on the last episode of this about a half hour ago, and she spoke so eloquently about how she really wasn't able to function. Those little things at home that mom was asking her to do, be it bring your laundry over to the laundry room, because her level of depression was so significant, doing that was making her head spin.
But unfortunately, Lucy, children who can speak eloquently about, she's not really a child at this point, I guess.
Right.
Students like Lucy who can speak eloquently about it are the exception rather than the rule.
Right.
And most students, because of stigma, don't want to be open about it. And there's a lot of work going on in society to erase the stigma.
Yeah, there really is. Thank goodness. Well, I am aware of the time. I cannot thank you enough for coming on the air today, Michael. It's so good to meet you. Can you give our listeners your website?
Sure. If anybody looking for a consultation or needs help, my website is Michael Gilberg. ESQ, that's MICHAELGILBERGESQ.com. Again, Michael Gilberg ESQ.com. And my contact info is on there for anybody who needs a consultation.
Okay, and we'll list it on here as well. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
1490 WGCH, Greenwich.